everyone, and welcome to Odd Trilogies with Logan and Andy. I'm Logan Sowash.
And I'm Andy Carr.
And on Odd Trilogies, we take a trio of films, usually, and we either tie them by numerical order, cast and crew, thematic elements, and we talk through each film and discuss the good, the bad, and the weird surrounding them. Today is not the case, actually. Today is our first prequel of the year.
Yeah.
So if you have just tuned in for this episode, welcome.
happy to have you.
Yeah, happy to have you. But usually we talk about a trilogy of films. But today, with our first prequel, we are going back to a trilogy we discussed a few years back with the Kung Fu Panda trilogy, and are discussing today Kung Fu Panda 4.
Yeah.
The latest animated action, you know, comedy starring Jack Black. And I'm now just completely involving everything
Awkwafina.
Thank you.
Bryan Cranston.
I can see her.
James Hong. Yeah.
James Hong and Lord and Favorite, Duck Dad, James Hong.
Yeah. Yeah, we did the original trilogy a couple years ago, and we had a great time with it. Great time talking about it. We knew if they ever did another one of these. I don't know if the fourth one was like slated when we did the
I think it
trilogy.
Was a possibility. Okay, yeah. I think it was like a...
They've kind of been
announced.
Talking about it for a couple of years at least. Yeah.
Well, the thing, too, about the Kung Fu, we talked about a little bit with our actual trilogy episode, is that Kung Fu Panda content hasn't necessarily been away
in the
8 years between 3 and 4 coming out, because there's, I think, like, what, 2 or 3 seasons of an Amazon show where Jack Black isn't Poe, but Poe isn't it.
Right.
There's also, I think, last year or the year prior, Netflix had, like, an original limited series or maybe a little...
It looks like there are technically 3 different animated series.
Of course there are.
One of them just finishing up last year.
I think that might be the
That's
one where...
That's the Netflix one, probably.
Yeah, I think Jack Black's actually in that one.
Oh, okay. So. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's been, like, specials peppered throughout the years, too.
Yeah, because DreamWorks is always, like, even if their properties don't make sense in terms of having a Halloween episode or a Christmas episode, it does not matter.
Yeah.
They'll get one of those at least.
Yeah.
I think they've done every holiday, at least every major American holiday.
With Kung Fu Panda or just with DreamWorks?
With just DreamWorks. Not with Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I would love to know what a Valentine's Day episode of Kung Fu Panda would be.
Yeah. But then they do Chinese New Year with Shrek.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Everyone, China's favorite DreamWorks character, Shrek. I was going to say Over the Hedge, but Chinese New Year Over the Hedge. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, so when that episode ended, I think we did kind of have an idea of, like, I don't know, maybe this will come out. And then genuinely randomly last year, it just kind of dropped a trailer for 4, and here we are now.
Yeah, not a lot of pomp and circumstance, but the movie's doing well.
Yes, the movie's doing well, and we will talk about the kind of the critical reception as well as how people are talking about the film, because ultimately... With Kung Fu Panda 4, there are a few things noticed going into the film that I think we both grabbed early on. One, the reason why 4 didn't come out a year or two after 3 is not because, you know, they had to take this much time to make a Kung Fu Panda 4. Genuinely, it just seemed like they were putting 4 on a possible pedestal of, like, maybe we'll do this. If not, it just depends.
Yeah.
Had a good enough idea. They took Kung Fu Panda off the shelf, and then lo and behold, we finally get a 4.
Yeah, I think 3 also, I mean, it was definitely successful, but was less successful than 2, so they might have been, like, counting their, you know,
there's also
weighing their options.
Yeah, and it also talks about the fact that that was a weird point in DreamWorks is, like, this is pre-COVID, too, so this, because sounds like COVID antics, the way they put their films out, but, like, both Kung Fu Panda 3 and How to Train Your Dragon 3 were both pushed to a January slot, which were both, like, January is a dead zone for most films. It's, unless you're an Oscar winner or an Oscar nominee that you're getting a bigger, wider release.
Yeah.
Most people consider January dumping grounds for things.
Right.
So when you put a film, especially a big budget animation film, in January, a lot of people are going to be like,
What
is it going to be, shit?
Yeah.
And usually they're not, but it's just...
Well, or people aren't going to the theaters.
That too.
They're, you know, we've been conditioned by year after year of, like, this being the dumping ground to just, like, we don't think about going to the theater in January. A lot of people don't. We have nothing better to
do. Well, unless it's something, you know, really, really just bad. We're just curious.
And then
we have to. Yes. Yeah, January's usually for us, I think, has been the time we've used to kind of prep for our top tens.
Yeah, certainly.
I say we, but mainly me. Yeah, because that's how I need to catch up. But yeah, with Kung Fu Panda 3, it came out. I think it's great. I think it's pretty much on the same level as the other two, and I really enjoyed a lot of the aspects of 3 that most animated films wouldn't really touch on in terms of, like, the dad dynamic.
Yeah, the dad dynamic's fun and a good refreshing kind of... I mean, all these movies have, like, a lesson, but that one was distinctive.
Yeah, and the fact that they have a villain that in that film, like, literally the whole villain's point with J.K. Simmons, it's Kai, is the fact that nobody knows who he is.
Right.
And that doesn't take away from how cool he's designed, his theme, his weapons, how imposing.
Yeah,
like,
he has the Imagine Dragons theme.
Yeah, I forgot that
there's like a motif in the score that
kind of sounds like a
I can't remember if Hans Zimmer said that motif was literally like pulled from Imagine Dragons, or if Imagine Dragons wrote a song for the movie and based it on that motif. I can't remember.
I don't remember Imagine Dragons being attached to 3. When I think of DreamWorks and pop songs attached to things, I think you're the same way. It's Ed Sheeran and How to Train Your Dragon 3. I'm on my way, or whatever that song is. That done to death when that film was going in theaters. That's when I think of a DreamWorks film in that. But yeah, I mean, with 3, it ends on a really solid, I would say, like, could you make more? Yeah. Should you make more? Don't have to. I mean, it's really ends on a way of, like, and Poe just keeps getting not even more and more popular or powerful, just ultimately becomes more and more himself.
Yeah.
And by the end of 3, it has this feeling of, like, well, what more could there be for him to find out for himself to be?
Right.
And then we're in this weird spot, because, again, not that every animated film or even every studio tries to hit trilogies, but a lot of the times it is very interesting that when an animated series gets past a 3 and goes into a 4, that either it just feels vastly different because of what it's trying to achieve, just feels very different from the previous films, or just ultimately, I think in this film's case, feels like another adventure. Like
You get into, like, kind of, it might be harsh, but, like, inessential territory.
No, I agree.
This is still doing the things that I liked from the first ones, but now I kind of feel like the urgency is gone.
Yes, because I think the thing is I really like Kung Fu Panda 4. I will also say that I think it's the weakest of the four films.
I agree.
But that doesn't mean it's a shit film. It isn't.
No.
It's well made.
It's a good time.
It's a good time. It's fun. It has a wonderful cover of a Britney Spears song by Tenacious D that no one asked for and genuinely would have never been on anyone's bingo card for a tie-in song for a Kung Fu Panda film, but my God, has it been in my head since we fucking saw that film in theaters?
Oh, it's an amazing cover.
It's a great cover. Again, Tenacious D, if it's...
Do a cover album, guys.
They have so many covers. I didn't realize how many covers they've done where it's like Jesus,
I think
fuck,
it's
just do cover
ever
albums.
Ever since COVID, they've just been doing like cover after cover because they're, you know, just fucking around and doing whatever they want.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh my gosh, more covers, guys.
I wouldn't be surprised because I know they've been working on their next album for a few years now, so it could be that their next album is a bunch of covers.
And that's the one where Video Games is off of, right? The Oni.
It'll probably be on that. Yeah. But they've just been doing single after single for a few years now.
Which makes sense. I mean, I think when Weird Al basically outright said, like, yeah, why would I make more albums when, like, singles do really well? And, like, I don't have to worry about forcing something into a whole big kind of LP. And with Tenacious D, of course, they're going to make more albums. But, like, yeah, they can just take their time.
Yeah. Well, and Jack Black's all over the place. So he's just going to do whatever fits into his brain at that moment.
God, the man was on the fucking red carpet for this, and he just kept talking about the Minecraft movie.
Yeah.
So he's got another fucking kids film on top of this. They're probably going to do another Jumanji sequel, I feel like, at this
point. They'll do another Mario, too.
A Mario, which they already, he's going to do Peaches 2, even peachier. You know, it's going to be great. You know they're going to they're going to coerce him to do
another
Peaches. Something like that. And you know what? It'll probably be better than Peaches, but people will say, it's not as good.
Yeah. Well, because we'll have to prop up the first Mario movie as this, like, legendary thing that
is
an iconic piece of culture.
Yeah. But, I mean, ultimately with Kung Fu Panda 4, it is the fact that there is an 8-year gap between feature films is not indicative of the, like, the narrative weight. Like, it doesn't really feel like it's been holding back because it has a huge story to tell.
No.
Like Andy said, it's pretty inconsequential, but that's a good thing and a bad thing.
It doesn't seem to have been a case of, like, oh, we've just been toiling away at this script for years and we just couldn't get it made. It was like, I think DreamWorks just eventually decided, yeah, we can do another one and had somebody make one.
Yeah, because I think out of all of DreamWorks's properties, excluding Shrek, because Shrek's in a weird spot where Shrek was so fucking huge that it built a spinoff, which has now become as big in some places as Shrek with the most recent Puss in Boots film. Like, DreamWorks properties usually, you give them three films, maybe.
Right.
If they're good enough,
maybe,
and then maybe you put some, make some TV shows. I mean, it happens with Madagascar. It happened with How to Train Your Dragon, which I know was a bit of a bummer because I think the team behind the first How to Train Your Dragon, like, wanted to do five because I think it's five books. It's like it's a book series, but ultimately,
I thought it was just one book.
No, I think there was multiple books in the series, and I think two underperformed a little bit, even though it was good critically.
Yeah,
the DreamWorks said you have to finish it in three.
I think two is the best one.
Two is the best one. I know you don't like three, but I don't remember hating three.
I don't think I hated it. I just was kind of like, eh.
Yeah. You really wanted that Ed Sheeran song in the film, and it didn't show up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so with DreamWorks properties, it just feels like, to get to the point where Kung Fu Panda, it never has felt like it is a series that has been teetering on, oh, we'll never get more of this. It feels like it's really, weirdly, the DreamWorks, like, animation, whatever hierarchy you want to call it, Kung Fu Panda has always felt like it has been the middle ground in terms of the importance to DreamWorks.
Yeah.
It's not the most important thing to them, but also isn't, like, worthless to them either.
Well, and it seems also,
it's comfortable.
Yeah, and it seems kind of, on the flip side of that is, like, the people making these movies, it just every time just kind of feels like, hey, we're content. We're happy to be making another one. Cool. We're not like banking on this and we're not like trying to set anything up for the future. But every time we get kind of, you know, just another effectively endearing story about Poe and his friends and his family.
And this is the first time, I think, in the whole series where the Furious Five doesn't have a part to play.
Right.
Which doesn't feel like it's a version of, like, oh, sorry, Angelina Jolie didn't want to do it, Lucy Liu didn't want to do it. No, it genuinely feels like, story-wise, when they were like, so Poe's going to do this, he's going to have this new plucky thief that'll become his sidekick and whatnot, and they're going to go to this new town and yada yada, and someone went, that's all cool. Well, how do the Furious Five tag in?
Yeah.
And, like, and then someone probably went, fuck. they're too, because, like, in all honesty, if the Furious Five are in this story, it's too powerful. Like, they'd be fine.
Sure.
Like, they're already fine by the time when they show up in this film. There's no real sense of danger.
Yeah.
When they show up, like, compared to, like, a Kung Fu Panda 2, where, like, a fucking peacock is killing people with a cannon.
Yeah.
And it's like, also, that peacock murdered all of Poe's family, at least what we thought of that moment, at least his mom. To get to a point where, like, in Kung Fu Panda 4, it's just, like, the funniest gag is the fact that nobody knows who Poe is at this new town, and that word travels fast, because in the span of, like, 5 seconds, he's already has a wanted poster.
Yeah.
It's the big city.
Yeah.
Because he's from the Valley of Peace, which he finds out is, like, a podunk town in comparison to other places, even though they've traveled outside of the Valley of Peace before, and to,
and it kind of, it feels like it's kind of, I mean, I don't want to, retcon is a strong word in a series with as loose a lore as this.
I don't know what you're referring to. With all those TV shows, there's got to be some fucking lore here.
I'm sure the
about.
Shows, are doing more. But it kind of feels like it's retconning, like, the importance of the Valley of Peace, or, like, Poe's role and all that. Yeah, because it kind of, I mean, the first three movies are constantly kind of hyping up this title of Dragon Warrior, and, like, it's, you know, the hero of the realm and everything like that. And he keeps, you know, Poe keeps defeating bigger and tougher enemies who want to basically rule the entire, you know, area. Mm-hmm. And then, we go to the big city in this, and everybody's like, oh, you're a hillbilly? Like, from that
Yeah, you're just a fat panda. What can you do?
Yeah.
It's like, this is wild.
Right.
This. Again, as a kid, yeah, again, kids are not going to really think about that.
No.
Watching this, and that's fine. Like, not even saying that kids are stupid or anything. Like, some are. But
sure.
Ultimately, with this film, it is just like, yeah, this is a fun adventure. Don't think about the fact that, like, the villain is a little interesting in terms of where they go, in terms of the hierarchy of it, because... Yeah. Just going into that, like, the villain in this film is Viola Davis as the Chameleon. Great choice in a lot of ways in terms of, like, voice-wise, art design-wise. I love the character design
mm-hmm.
for Chameleon. I love that she forces everyone to drink out of little cups and eat off little things because she's so little.
Yeah.
But I will say, going from Tai Lung to Lord Shen... to Kai, who is an undead, basically an undead war hero to a degree until he becomes...
Yeah, he's like a vengeful soul.
A vengeful soul, down to a chameleon that doesn't know kung fu for the majority of the film.
And she's like a mob boss?
Yeah.
Kind of?
It works.
Yeah,
again,
it's fine.
It's fine. It's just weird because once she says that she doesn't know any kung fu, I was like,
oh,
okay.
Which
what's the film again?
I think there's a version of this movie where you bring that up early on, and you have a really fascinating villain out of it. I mean, come on, we're four movies into this kung fu series,
yeah,
and to have a villain who doesn't know kung fu but uses, you know, other means, there's plenty of room to play there. The movie doesn't really play with that because the solution to that problem is, oh, she's just gonna copy kung fu abilities from past villains.
And also villains we've never seen. They're probably in the TV shows.
Well, yeah, they're at least villains that are implied to have been a part of Poe's previous adventures.
Yeah.
Whether or not they appear anywhere. But yeah, I will say, though...
that scene's really funny, because in that scene you get a decent fight with Tai Lung.
Yeah.
And then every single villain afterwards, she just, like, basically hides and snipes with her tongue, takes their soul, and throws them away. And it's like, I kind of want to see them all kind of fight a little bit.
Yeah. Give me a montage of her taking out every... Yeah. I will say, though, I was pretty worried. I was... After watching the trailer when it came out last fall, I think, not thrilled with just the idea of, like, oh, okay, it's been 8 years. We're gonna do another one, and guess what? The villain is just all the previous villains watered down and boiled into one. I was kind of like, I was kind of cringing going into it, wincing, waiting for that just really flat. But I do think they do it a lot better than I was expecting. And I think Viola Davis manages to make the Chameleon, like, a pretty fun and compelling character, even if, she doesn't have a ton of kind of martial identity of her own. And they also, I think, have fun with the copy-paste in the end.
There is a version of this film where I do think there is no sidekick like Awkwafina. There is instead... a version of this where halfway through the film, Chameleon gets the abilities of the previous villains, and the previous villains have to team up with Poe to stop her.
That'd be good.
Because again, it's like, and I get it, at a certain point, because I thought this too, because in Kung Fu Panda 4, there's a moment where after Poe saves the day, I know, spoiler alert, but the Kung Fu Panda does win.
But that's right before he dies.
Yeah, that's right before he says four, and then the Kyle card shows up.
And then he's cut in half. He dies brutally.
It says four? Question mark. But yeah, at one point when Poe wins, like, Tai Lung has a little part in this film. Like, Ian McShane actually comes back for a little bit.
Yeah, he actually has dialogue.
And it's fun to have him back, but it is interesting to have them all be like, we now respect you, Poe. And then you have Lord Shen, who, again, is a peacock that killed a lot of pandas, including Poe's mom, just to stop Poe from existing.
Yeah.
And to see him just be like, I'm going to bow too. Just had a hard cut in my brain to Fast 8 when Jason Statham's at the very end barbecue, and it's like, listen.
Wait, why?
This guy, I get he's just a dude and there are other circumstances, but this guy still killed Han.
Yeah.
He still killed the family. So, like, yeah, so it's interesting, and again, as it stands, we'll say this a lot, it still works, it's a fun time, but it is just kind of like, it's hard not to watch this, at least at our age, and it makes it sound like we're in our, like, we're fucking old, but it ultimately, like, watching all three of those films way back, and we watched them back to back to back, like, watching all the original three films and just being like, God, even though, like, you know, I could see someone loving the first one more than the second one more the third, or third, yada, yada, there is a genuine progression in terms of, like, the villains, this Poe's story, the relationships between, like, his father as well as the Furious Five, and there's genuine progression here that I think is actually a through line that makes this trilogy worthwhile. Then you get to four, and four does feel like an afterthought in a lot of those kind of situations.
It's not, it wouldn't be inappropriate to kind of lump this in with, like, the Toy Story 4s of the world.
See, but that's interesting, though, too, because in my mind, Toy Story 4's biggest issue is that it's not, the demographic for that film isn't the kids that grew up with 1, 2, and 3. 4 feels like, Toy Story 4 feels like it's made for the dads that had the kids that grew up. Like, Toy Story 4 feels like an empty nester dad film.
Mm.
Like, where it genuinely is like, hey, you know how the kids were, like, you know, constantly, you know, relating to the toys, relating to Andy, and just having a toy like Woody or Buzz in some way, shape, or form. Toy Story 4 is basically saying, yeah, your dad is Woody. Yeah. At a certain point, he's just not going to know what to do, and so maybe he'll find an old flame. Like, it's such a weird, and it's very clear that with Toy Story 4, a lot of the reason why it's like that is because that wasn't the original intention. Like, a lot of stuff changed between, like, the original idea, because I think Rashida Jones was originally attached to the script of four and then left. And then they got somebody else to come in. And so but like, even then, that, like, there's at least a vision that, like, even if it doesn't necessarily work as well as the other films, it's like, I see it. With four, it genuinely does feel like the A players are doing something else. Or maybe the B players are busy working on, like, this or that. Mm-hmm. And maybe the C players are working on, I don't know, fucking the bad guys. Maybe a bad guys TV show. Well, it's like, they're just taking really good animators, really good directors, and being like, hey, listen, we need a Kung Fu Panda 4. Go for it.
Yeah.
Like, nothing too crazy. And it's not crazy.
Yeah,
it's pretty straightforward.
And it's not soulless by any means.
No.
It does feel kind of like, here's an obligatory one more Kung Fu Panda movie.
Because if there's... Because if anything, the one thing that I was kind of glad going into this that wasn't kind of felt phoned in, because I think you felt this way and I was kind of iffy on it. And I know our friend Adam was just like, when he first heard that she was in this, he was like, oh, God.
Viola Davis.
No. That's probably when we all heard that, we went, really? Uh-huh. Okay. And she has fun with that. But no, it's good old Awkwafina.
Yeah.
An actress and comedian that I do think is very talented, and unfortunately a lot of the things that most people have seen her in is, like, most people in comedy in general, it's pretty much the same thing almost over
it's
and
kind
over.
Of a Melissa McCarthy situation. I think both of those people, it's different, but I think both Awkwafina and Melissa McCarthy, very talented in their own right. I think they've both given some really effective performances in their element and out of their element.
Yes.
But yeah, they tend to kind of get pigeonholed into this one trick kind of, for Awkwafina, it's like the spunky devil may care sidekick figure.
Mm-hmm. Who frumps.
Who frumps.
She frumps a lot. She's like, she has her shoulders forward a lot.
Yeah.
When I think of, like, it's funny to say that out loud now because it's something now that I've just subconsciously thought about. Like, there's just a shot in Shang-Chi where it's just Simu and her just standing outside of a fucking alley. And just the way she's standing, it's like, that is how she stands. That's just how she stands.
Yeah.
Now she can't be putting on an act. That has to hurt. And now that's all I think of when I think of her is just like these, like, forward shoulders. And Awkwafina... Post The Farewell, a film that I genuinely watched and was like, holy fuck, she's good. I want her to get more stuff like this. To see that she basically has gotten not that is not surprising. But,
no.
like, at least intertwined with certain things. She does get stuff like The Quiz Lady, which was a Hulu original. It was a Searchlight film with Sandra Oh, where they play sisters. I heard that's a good time. She also did, I think it's another thing why we were both kind of iffy on it. She also did a few years back, around the time the pandemic was happening, about a year after, was Raya.
Oh, yeah.
Who I honestly believe she is very much miscasted in that film. And I think she is underutilized in a lot of ways in that film. And to have her be in that as an animated film and be like, well, hopefully the next time she's in an animated film, it's better. It is good that at least in 4, she's got more to do. But I would also say that that isn't a lot.
Yeah, I mean, her character is maybe the most, like, in terms of arc and dialogue, is the most just kind of obvious the entire time.
Yeah.
Kind of goes through all the most rote beats imaginable. And that's not Awkwafina's fault, but she is kind of just playing this archetype again that keep seeing her do.
And it's one of those things where it's like her arc in the... I can't even remember what her name is. And I mean,
Jen.
Yeah. Okay. Because there's like at least 3 characters that have, like, I think it's all spelled the same way sometimes or just off enough, but they're all pronounced so similarly that it's like Jen is next to Shen is next to Sheen. Like, it's like, oh my lord, you're making this good. Poor children are going to be like, what is going on?
Yeah, you've got Lord Shen.
Yeah, Lord Shen.
You've got Zhen.
Yes.
You've got Li Shan, is Po's dad.
That's right. Again, yeah, I think when we were watching 4, I was just like, okay, that's fine. That's a good choice. So I guess that's fine. It had the energy with her character that it's like, could you do a TV show with her character? Like, as like a lead? Sure. But I feel like it's in the same area as like when Lucasfilm was like, hey, guess what? Maybe we could do a film with Phoebe Waller's character from Dial of Destiny.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
Right.
Why would you do that? I mean, they're fine.
Yeah.
Like Awkwafina's fine in this, but like in terms of like character lights, in this film, you get all of her backstory, or at least a good chunk of it.
Yeah.
And nothing in her backstory screams like, I would love
to know more.
Love to dive deeper into this.
And well, at this point, it doesn't help too that her arc and her and Po's dynamic is very similar to the main duo in like Zootopia.
Yes.
Another fox, you know, pair that includes a fox.
Mm-hmm. No Judy Hopps. I know all those people who are excited out there. Judy Hopps does not make an appearance in Kung Fu Panda 4. There are some rabbits. There's 3 little rabbits that love blood and violence, which is classic. Ah, yes. Kids will like this.
But Jason Bateman Fox does show up and spews slurs at the audience.
And talks about how much he loves Arby's for some reason. No one asked him for that.
But yeah.
I think we had a different screener than most people. No, at this point, I might as well we just talk about the premise. The whole thing about the film is that, in terms of Po's arc, is that Shifu tells him, well, guess what? Let's just pretend that 3 and 4, there is an 8-year gap. So, like, Shifu goes, well, it's been 8 years. You'd been doing great as Dragon Warrior, but guess what? You now officially have upgraded to a peace ambassador or something like that. He basically is going to be, while we have always thought that the Dragon Warrior was the tip-top for Po.
You just don't go anywhere from that.
4 goes, there's a secret diamond, you know, status that you haven't earned yet until now, and that's like, basically a peace ambassador for the Valley of Peace, and I think
the spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace.
Which they ultimately, unsurprisingly, they say that's what Oogway was.
Yeah.
And it's like, sure, okay, that's fine.
Am I forgetting, or was Oogway also
a turtle?
He was a turtle. Wasn't he also the previous Dragon Warrior?
At one point, I think he was, yeah.
Okay. So, at the beginning of Kung Fu Panda
1, yeah.
How long have we been without a Dragon Warrior?
I don't know.
Or was he just transitioning and we just didn't have the terminology yet because that hadn't been retconned in yet? Had he just transitioned from Dragon Warrior to spiritual leader and then Po?
In my mind, I always couldn't, like, looking back, it kind of felt like it went Oogway gave it to Shifu, to a certain degree. And then Shifu was trying to make Tai Lung Dragon Warrior, and then that debacle happens. And then I think they just don't have a Dragon Warrior for a while.
Yeah.
Because they kind of felt like we tried to basically build a Dragon Warrior and it didn't work.
Right.
So I guess we can't do that. And so they basically waited until Oogway was just like, ah, yes, give me the fat panda in front. He's mine. Yeah. And
I guess there was also the Furious Five, and they were probably all like kind of waiting in the wings for maybe a chance.
Well, that's
to be
the
Dragon
big thing
War.
Is because that's Tiger. Because I think
Tigress
big basically
beef.
Yeah. Shifu basically goes, listen, I know I fucked up on Tai Lung, but Tigress is really going to be the one that I did fuck up on. And then Oogway goes, nah, I want the panda.
Actually, it's Po.
I want Po. but no, yeah, I think Oogway, it's kind of established in 3 that, like, when it was wartime, that's probably when Oogway, like, young Oogway was probably Dragon Warrior to an extent.
Yeah.
And then he banished Kai, and then ultimately life goes on. Like,
when will we get a Oogway prequel film?
You joke, but as soon as I said that, I was like, yeah. In 3, they show Kai and Oogway just mowing people down.
Yeah.
And that would be kind of fun.
Right. I'm also biased because I played a turtle monk
in
a Dungeons & Dragons campaign.
Yes, and old Oogway. Because the actor passed away, I believe.
Oh, the actor for Oogway?
I thought he did. Because he was older than James Hong.
Oh.
I thought. Because I think he did 3.
Randall Duk Kim.
Is he still alive?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, never
mind. He's 80.
Well, I guess it makes sense in terms of story-wise. There's
but
not much you can do with Oogway other than what they do with him in 3. But
Whoa. He's the doctor in John Wick 3, the one that, like, sews up John's wound
holy
like,
shit.
On the fly and is like, this is going to get me screwed.
That's
but
great.
I'm gonna do
That's
it.
Great.
That's
yeah.
him.
That's good. That's good. I resend it. I'm glad he's still alive. Yeah. I just assumed he didn't do much with it because, like, he doesn't get a line or anything in this.
No.
Like, I wasn't surprised.
Not even like a face in the sky.
Yeah, like, I wasn't surprised when we got to, like, yes, let's go see all the old villains and Kai and Chen don't say anything. Where I'm like, no surprise, they couldn't get Oldman and JK for 2 lines.
Right.
They're a bit busy at the moment. while Ian McShane, who always feels like he's busy, is never busy for a good old Tai Lung surprise.
Yeah.
Because it's like the first time he's been Tai Lung in 16 years.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Right.
I'm trying to think of where else to go with this. Because, like, basically, Poe needs to become the Valley, the peace ambassador of the Valley. Poe doesn't want to let go of the fact that he is Dragon Warrior because it's easy.
Right.
It's what he's known.
And Poe is kind of, you know, typically averse to change.
Yeah.
And so he kind of loves to get in his groove and keep going.
Which, unsurprisingly, perfect for a kid's protagonist. Because by the end, he goes, I care now. Or something along those lines.
I can change.
I can do this.
Yeah.
And ultimately, he tries to find a Dragon Warrior, tries, quote-unquote, and then it's like, oh, I guess no one's good enough for me, and then just, like, doesn't do anything else. And then he runs into a little fox thief played by Awkwafina.
Yeah.
Awkwafina says, hey, just so you know, someone says that Tai Lung is attacking this area out here, and then Poe goes, Tai Lung? You mean the villain from Kung Fu Panda 1?
Yeah.
I recognize that name.
Voiced by Ian McShane?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Shifu, I can't do my duties unless I go take care of this.
Right.
And that's the story. I mean,
yeah.
B-plot is great because, surprisingly, B-plot is actually Poe's 2 dads going on adventure trying to help Poe.
Yeah.
And this is another aspect of, like Andy said, not necessarily retcon, but it's weirdly the story about how these 2 dads can't handle adventure together. Even though that in 3, they literally dual fight fucking jade statues. Like, basically immortal beings of master kung fu artists, and they hold their own.
And then B-plot in this is them bumbling their way across the countryside.
Bryan Cranston Panda's too afraid to fight. Well, James Hong would kick anyone's ass if his arms were longer than 6 inches.
If he wasn't a duck.
Yeah, if he wasn't a duck. Yeah. But still, it's great to see Poe's two gay dads just doing their thing. Because I love them. I love those dads. And I would literally watch a TV show. And then, honestly, if they did the Pixar thing and they just like started doing shorts,
oh yeah,
I would watch. That'd be great. I would watch Duck Dad, and I would watch Duck Dad and Panda Dad do wild things together.
And Oogway War.
Oogway War should be a limited series. directed by Denis Villeneuve.
Jeez.
It's animated, so Denis gonna be have to. He's gotta commit. He's gotta commit. You can't do live action, Denis.
No.
You're attached to an animated property. You can't do this.
Well, now I want to see him try and do it live action.
What do you want to do, Keanu as live action Oogway?
In makeup, full prosthetic.
No, it really is. There's like, it's just. He's wearing John Wick outfit, but just a shell on top of it. And it's the shittiest shell possible.
Face is painted green.
And Kai is just JK, no adding any height whatsoever, just a snout. Yeah, Kung Fu Panda 4. What else could we talk about in terms of... I mean, it's not bad. I mean, again, that's one thing I want to keep bringing up, is the fact that we don't have a lot to say about it is not indicative of its quality, really, other than the fact...
It kind of is.
Well, in terms
but
of...
not to the point of
it being,
a waste of time.
Indicative of it being a bad film, I think what I meant to say. It's more indicative of the fact that, like, we have kind of... If this is where Kung Fu Panda is going, we now know that we've been a little bit spoiled with the first three films. And so now if we get a 5, which it's not been announced at the point that this has come out.
No.
But
this kind of ends on the same note as all three previous ones, where it's like, they're not really teasing a sequel, but also they could just as easily do another one if they wanted to.
And again, it's one of those things where it's like, you could do a sequel that is just like Poe is a side character and Awkwafina's character is the lead. I don't think that's a great idea.
Don't do that.
I don't think they should. But at the same time, it's like, if they feel like, oh, they sell enough toys of Awkwafina's character, maybe they could do that or whatnot.
I will say, if anything says that they're done with the series after this, it's the fact that they gave Awkwafina Poe's role. Which I'm not saying it's like nail in the coffin or anything like that, but it's like you wrote your main character out of his, you know, famous role to be the kind of mentor figure, so... That's a pretty obvious time to hang it up. But then again, we got Creed. And Creed was great.
Yeah, Andy's right.
But Awkwafina's no Michael B. Jordan.
Awkwafina Creed in the Kung Fu Panda universe. No, yeah, I mean, because there's different avenues. You could literally do, if it wanted to do another trilogy, easy idea, just like having Awkwafina's character keep constantly training as the Dragon Warrior in the process of the other two films.
Just more lessons between Poe and her.
Well, Poe is trying to figure out how to be a peace ambassador.
Yeah, but he keeps fighting people.
Yes.
Because like he can't stop fighting.
Yeah. It's
becomes really violent and dark and just a very hopeless man who just... He hurts because it brings
him
pleasure.
A mean Poe is really what honest to God, that would be a lot of fucking fun if one of the films was just like one of the antagonists is just a mean panda.
Oh,
almost like a wow, type of panda where it's just like just looks scruffy and rough and just seems completely out of bounds.
You do that for Kung Fu Panda 6 because then it rhymes with Kung Fu Panda 3, introducing all the other pandas, and then when you get to 6, it's more pandas, but this time. Not good.
But you keep the tagline, the wait is over, from 3, and you just bring it over to 6.
The wait is over now.
No, I'm saying don't change it.
Oh, okay.
Just literally redo the poster for 3, but do it for 6.
But with mean pandas on the poster.
More intense, mean pandas with knives under Poe as he tries to do his splits.
Okay, so then Kung Fu Panda 5 needs to be a genocidal maniac, just like Lord Shen.
I mean, because that's the thing, too, is like in the original, like the reason...
Or maybe you get evil panda in 5 and he's trying to kill all of Lord Shen's people out of revenge. All of the peacocks.
You either do mean panda in 5 and a robot panda in 6.
Mecha Poe
at this point. Make it a Sonic the Hedgehog film at this fucking point. Just go to a degree
let's
of
just
like,
cross
okay.
it over.
Yeah, let's just fucking
Sonic
go for
and Poe.
Yes, they'd love that.
Plus Knuckles.
Plus Knuckles. Featuring Funky Kong.
Featuring music from Devil May Cry.
Well, another interesting aspect about this that, like, 4 tries to do in a unique way, but it doesn't really hit as well compared to this, where it's like the goals of the villains in the last few films are in the first film, it is Tai Lung feeling like he has been betrayed by the people that he has taken his, basically took his entire life, was told that he was the chosen one, and then ultimately was lied to accidentally by Shifu. Because Shifu fully believed he was also the chosen one, but ultimately was wrong. So Tai Lung sees himself as, you know, wronged and needs to right what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And two, Lord Shen's big thing is trying to, basically in his own personal life, evolve the technology of warfare.
Yeah.
And also become like more powerful just by taking over more land. And also his big personal thing is the fact that he was told that a fortune, that a panda was going to take him down, which is why he commits panda genocide.
Right,
in two.
Right.
And then in three, the big thing about Kai is like, he's immortal. We've now gotten to the point in the series where we're now fully going into spirit realm shit.
Yeah.
Literally going from the first film, like having Poe kill Tai Lung with the Wuxi Fingerhold, not seeing what that means, and then getting to three where Poe sacrifices his physical body to take Kai back to the spirit realm with the Wuxi Fingerhold.
The climax in three gets really
so
cool
fucking
with
good.
The spectacle. That's another thing with four that we never really like reach that level of spectacle.
I'm gonna say this, and this is something that is like is always a hot button topic when it comes to animation, but I think the animation in 4 is fine, but I was a little bit disappointed that it doesn't really feel like it improved a lot between 3 and 4.
I think it probably...
And that is not... I'm going to say it's not because it's not Spider-Verse shit.
No.
I kind of was interested if they would try to do that like they did with Puss in Boots.
Uh-huh. Try
but they
and...
didn't. That's fine. But ultimately, it just doesn't really feel like shading... I mean, again, the choreography and the direction is still really, really good.
Yeah.
It just feels like more of what we saw from 3.
Yeah, I would imagine if there are any improvements, it's like technical granular shit. Like, oh, Poe has more hairs on his body.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like conceptual improvement. It's not expanding on the visual language of the series the way 2 and 3 expanded.
Yeah.
This is not really doing anything new visually or narratively.
You show like an older kid, like early teens, like kid, and just be like, when do you think this film came out after 3? They'd probably just say, what, a year or two?
Yeah, I don't know that you'd be able to tell a huge difference. It's not like Toy Story 3 to 4.
Oh, because 4 is fucking gorgeous.
Yeah, 4 is absurd.
Yeah, 4 is insane, the amount of just like light, like the light kind of dynamics, as well as the animation itself.
Mm-hmm.
The shading's incredible in 4. Like, 3 is a great looking movie, and then 4 comes out.
Yeah,
and it's
but
like
it's a great looking movie from 2009. Yeah.
And then 3 looks like a piece of shit, doesn't it? And it's like, why'd you go this hard for the fucking Woody meets his old flame movie?
Yeah.
Jesus fuck.
Toy Story 4 is basically like, well, we're not going to make it live action, but we're going to get as close as we can in animation.
We don't need to put a cat in here, but we're going to put a cat in Toy Story 4 just to show you that we don't make dogs like we did in the first film. We don't make pets like that anymore. We now make actual pets.
We didn't see the dog in 4, did we?
Nope. It's just
I
want to
see how they rectify that. How they?
Do you know how I want them to rectify it?
Yeah.
By not doing that at all.
Okay.
I want him to show back up looking exactly like he did in
still a really terrible model,
technically,
like no texture.
Well, technically, if dog ears, he's probably dead at this point, canonically.
Yeah.
But bring another dog in and just change the shade a little bit.
His son.
Make him look exactly like him. Just the shittiest looking dog.
Even just the lighting and shading isn't right on him. Basically cel shaded.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, again, it's, I think a lot of people, because one of the reasons why I wanted to preface that we enjoyed this film is because I was surprised going into 4 hearing mostly like pretty negative things. And then overall, I looked back into it. Most people are just saying that it's forgettable. And 4 is fairly forgettable in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But I do think that a lot of people are also saying it's boring, and I gotta be honest, this movie's a tight 90, and Jack Black's still kicking it.
Yeah, it kind of moves too fast to be boring.
Honest to God, I think the pacing is, like, insane.
Yeah.
I think it could be a little bit, which is,
it
again,
would be longer.
Yeah, just a smidge.
Yeah.
2 minutes. Maybe that'll help.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think the biggest thing that kind of takes the wind out of this one's sails, where the other three had it, is just that Poe's central, like, arc thing it kind of feels arbitrary and out of nowhere. Like the whole like, oh, you have it to is. Be, you have to become the spiritual leader now. Which, and it's like,
yeah,
that has nothing to do with anything Poe has been trying to do these last three movies.
No.
It has nothing to do with what he wants. It's, you know, and the lesson still works in the end, but
yeah.
It's kind of like, I'm watching this journey that I didn't really care to see
mm-hmm.
because Poe was already somewhere yeah. where I liked him.
Yeah. And the lesson, yeah, lesson still works. The lesson still has it. Of all the pacing-wise, the lesson, I think, is the one that is the most like, yeah, I know where this is going.
Yeah.
It works well. There's also a through line throughout all the films is that there's a special move that helps trump the villain in the end. And even in the fourth one, it's... The move is unique. All four films have a unique version of the idea of the move, and the way that it's implemented in four, I think, is unique because it ties into Poe having to let go in a Dragon Warrior sense.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's again, it's a Kung Fu Panda movie. It's hard to get mad at, really. I think because, like, I think both of us going into it had whelmed pretty decent expectations that
mm-hmm.
it's just going to be fun.
Yeah.
Like, that's all we wanted. And we came out of it being like, oh, damn, that was really fun. And I
yeah.
think kids will really like it. And we also saw it in a strangely packed theater.
Oh,
our
it was,
theater was.
Yeah.
And people were fucking clapping at the end, which I was like, I'm
it
glad.
It was like we were at one of those promo screenings.
Yeah, weirdly.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we weren't. It was just
yeah.
like people were really enjoying it. And also, the demographic, we did see it at like a 7 o'clock showing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we had like... families, people our age, people older than us.
There were a
like,
lot of people around our age.
Yeah,
like lots of Kung Fu Panda kids now grown up going to see.
Yeah,
them.
Kung Fu Panda kings is what you meant to say.
Yeah, kings and queens.
Kings and queens. But yeah, it's a lot of dragon warriors of all ages in the
yeah.
theater, and people were really enjoying it. Like it was a good crowd, and I think it was the best way to see that film because I think if you're an empty theater and you're watching that, like you could chuckle to yourself, but it's like. It's kind of like a, huh, like it's, there's
yeah,
a lot of cool ideas in this that ultimately just go to a one bit gag or just a little moment of this.
Well, and
like,
every little gag or little moment that they go for is kind of just lifted from another movie
mm-hmm.
that's kind of similar to this one. It's kind of like, oh, okay, I've seen that gag before. Like where they're going back and forth from side to side on that
house.
On that
yes.
tavern. It's like, oh, we're going to fall into the water.
Oh, and they don't. But
yeah.
then later.
But then they do.
A little kooky.
Yeah.
And then there's also stuff where it's like the new stuff that is like, oh, that'd be really cool to see animated. Ultimately ends up being one scene, animated really cool. That's it.
Yeah.
Like an example is got Ke-Hee Kwan showing up in the film. Great casting for a Kung Fu Panda film, honestly. He just brings the right energy as a pangolin. In
yeah.
the underground thieves den, basically.
Right.
He rolls around everywhere. So immediately as I saw him, he's like, well, he's going to be knocking people down like bowling pins, right? And then the one fight scene you see him in, not only do they show him doing that, they also put like bowling pin noises
right.
in as he does it. But like, that's the one scene you get.
Yeah.
You get the one creative moment in there with the new characters. And it's like, that's fun. But we could have
yeah.
gotten more. Like, it's, I mean, again, like,
but,
I see,
yeah.
I think in 3, where it's like, yes, 3 kind of has that in terms of, like, you have, like, the panda that has the, like, the ribbon kind of dancing aspect. You also
mm-hmm.
have the one panda that hugs really too hard, and, like,
yeah.
they find a way to Magnificent Seven Samurai it to fight the Jade Warriors, but, like,
yeah,
there just was such a kineticism to it that is just, like...
Well, and the thing with 3, too, is, like, in that climax, they go to a whole nother... level of what the fighting can look like.
Yes.
Like the spiritual realm.
Oh, and my gosh. And that
yeah, I mean,
still looks so fucking good.
I think your ticket to doing something really cool and different here with the action would have been, you know, really just leaning into the, like, transforming villain figure.
Yeah.
And they do that a little bit, but it doesn't, it's never, it doesn't really blow your socks
off. I was shocked by how much I think every time I saw the thumbnail after watching the trailer, they were pushing evil Chameleon Poe.
Yeah.
Like how, like, the Chameleon
yeah.
Poe, and, like, ultimately it's just a small part in the final fight.
Yeah,
it's
and it doesn't even
role.
Really feel like a, you know, there have been other movies where when you see the main character fight against the evil version of themselves or whatever, whether it's, like, Avengers Endgame or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you're, like, watching the fight and you're like, oh, every move they're making, I can tell that that's, you know, that they're
yeah.
the same person. That's so cool.
And
in this, it's just kind of evil Poe just kind of fights like everybody else and
yeah.
not like Poe.
And also it simplifies the masters of the world, which is so funny to me where it's
yeah.
like, this is a series that has made fun of the amount of masters there are in terms of kung fu with, like, I mean, 3 has fucking Master Chicken.
Yes.
Like, they've clearly, like, but, like, they simplify it to a point where they go, and they're all masters to a degree because they all have one secret technique.
They all have one trick, yeah.
Only one. Only
that's
one
the only thing that
technique
makes them good.
And it
if
almost,
you can exploit that, they lose.
Yes, and it's just so funny to be like, ah, yes, Lord Shen in his iconic technique.
What? Cannons?
I was gonna say, okay. He's like, oh,
warfare.
He uses his wings to be a block or something. It's like, it's like, okay. It's just funny to be like, ah, yes, this is why they're all masters.
Yeah.
It's like, I think it's the fact that, like, you know, they're good at
they're really
they fucking
powerful.
Do.
Yeah.
Or like in the earlier films, like at least in one, like everyone fights with a unique, yeah, like style. To a degree that it's like, it doesn't feel like, oh, I can't wait for them to get their special move. Like, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, they just...
No.
They already have whatever special moves they need.
It's the fact that they all fight like the animal that they are.
Yeah.
Like, they all kind of
and
exemplify
their
physical form.
And they use the benefit. Like, that's why the Furious Five is so great as a team. And
they all fight differently.
And even though it makes sense not to have this in the story because it does feel like a very... It's weirdly a film that, like... is wants to push that it's a bigger story than it actually is, but ultimately it's very small.
Small, yeah.
Because it's like, ah, yes, if I take all the villains at a blood moon, I can become the best kung fu warrior in existence.
Yeah.
And there's never an energy of like, oh, that's going to, well, let's, oh, I'm scared.
Yeah.
Like,
I think if you made this movie within a few years of 3, you'd get more like, Furious Five versus the evil masters.
Yeah.
Like, somehow this character brings them all back or whatever.
Like...
You'd get kind of like this little Avengers-y type thing. But this far removed, it's kind of like, well, people are here to see Poe, so let's focus on Poe.
Like, Tai Lung is, as for a kid's villain, again, and we're also, we're talking about this as if you're a child and you've never seen horrifying things yet in your life, but like when Tai Lung is scary in the first film because it's like every time they try to stop him, not just the main protagonist, but also like just the forces that are trying to stop him in the jail or like in towns and whatnot, every time they try to stop him, it doesn't work. It doesn't faze him. When it ultimately leads to like the scariest part of Tai Lung in the first film is when like the lightning cracks and he goes from like the bottom of the steps to the top of the steps. He's like, I've come home, father. Best part with Tai Lung. Lord Shen is kind of terrifying because not only is he introducing cannons to this world, he genuinely fucking kills people.
Yeah.
He kills a master.
It's kind of an unfeeling force of nature.
He kills a master. He is, you know, described as the head of a panda genocide and ultimately, like, feels foolish to go against him because everyone is, like, under his thumb.
Right.
And then when it comes to Kai turns people into fucking jade zombies.
Yeah.
That
and
no one can stop.
Immortal.
Yeah. And we watch him slowly turn every single one of the Furious Five up until Tigress has to basically leave as Shifu is no more.
Yeah.
Like, that's just really cool. Like, that's just really well done in a way where it's like, yeah, it's not, after a certain age, it's not terrifying, but it is like, goddamn, that is pretty intimidating, like, for a kid's film.
The chameleon doesn't.
She pushes a person down the stairs.
Yeah.
It's like the big thing. Like, we hear a lot about how terrifying she is. Let's see how she's terrifying.
The biggest quote-unquote scare factor, or like the most imposing thing about Chameleon is that her plan, her plan, her ultimate goal is, you know, if she was able to pull it off totally, like it would be a very bad thing for the world. You're releasing all these masters and then accruing all their powers and then basically being unstoppable, but like... she herself is not particularly imposing and doesn't really accomplish much either.
Like, even Poe outright says to her face, like, yeah, I know what you're doing. Like, yes, I saw a vision, but, like, you're trying to get all the masters because you want to be so powerful you can take over other places.
Yeah.
And Chameleon's like, what? How the fuck do you... And it's just, like, compared to, like, Kai, when in Kai it's, like, no one knows his name and it's, like... Yeah, that's a gag, but then after that, like, Kai just takes you. Kai just turns you into a jade zombie, while as with Chameleon, it's almost like, well, that's rude. You didn't have to say my plan out like that. It's like, yeah, to be honest, this is a lot more grounded of a villain than we've gotten, but, like, everyone is afraid of her. Clearly, it would be better if she didn't exist in the brain of power that she is. And what is her plan? Power. Got it.
Yep.
Like, yeah, it works, especially because it works because Viola Davis is having a fun time.
Yeah.
She's doing a great job with the little she's given. And just ultimately, it leads to the fourth one ending, you know, ending fine enough, just being a tight 90, like every Kung Fu Panda film should probably be. But ultimately, just being like, well, that was another fun adventure, Poe. Hopefully, in the next film, when you have to become Peace Ambassador level Zeta, we can figure out how we're going to do that for you as well. And it's like, cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad that, like, it's out, and I'm glad that Kung Fu Panda 4 exists and it's not a giant piece of shit. But it is kind of like, yeah, it makes sense that this is, like, not the best thing in the world. And that's fine. Yeah. There's not, it doesn't have to be. Most films kind of fit in this range.
Yeah.
And quality-wise. Like, especially kids' films, it just kind of happens like this.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we have a Kung Fu Panda franchise with, like, 3 shows and 4 films, and the fact that, like, 4 comes out and it's like, oh, yes, good old Kung Fu Panda experience. That's fine.
Yeah.
Could be so much worse.
True.
Could be, what's bad DreamWorks films? Could be Ants.
Yeah.
Home.
Could.
Did you see Home?
I did not.
I did not see Home. Maybe, kids probably liked Home. I keep being told by people that are way too close to our age that Turbo's good.
Oh, okay.
I can't believe.
We're into Turbo Revisionist era?
Have you seen Turbo?
No, I just...
I don't know.
I just know it was not, like, glowing when it came out.
Well, you talk about the snail that wants to be a NASCAR racer is not, like, with Ryan Reynolds. Who else is in that? Samuel Jackson. I think Michael Pena's in that fucking film, too.
I don't know.
That's a film that I think, that film's, like, 10-plus years old, right? Almost?
It's gotta be.
Almost.
Gotta be close.
Because unlike the Pixar of it all, when it comes to DreamWorks post a certain point, it's a blur.
Yeah.
It's an absolute blur. I know Penguins of Madagascar's in there at some point.
It makes a lot of
Trolls films. I forgot there's a trilogy of Trolls films, which your wife just wants us to constantly do.
Yeah.
That's her. She keeps bringing that up.
This film's director, Mike Mitchell, directed the first Trolls movie.
That tracks.
And actually, there's a lot of tracking going on here because Mike Mitchell made Shrek Forever After, Alvin and the Chipmunks Chipwrecked, the SpongeBob movie Sponge Out of Water, the Lego Movie 2, and Trolls.
Oh.
So he's kind of like we need another one of these. Plug him in.
I will be honest. I've not seen Shrek Forever After, but I will. I have heard it's better than Shrek the Third.
Yeah.
So I'll at least give him that.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I also forget
that. And Sky High. He directed Sky High.
He directed Sky High?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Deuce Bigalow, Male Gigolo.
Wow.
That's pretty
probably,
much his career.
That's the most surprising one of them all.
Yeah. That was his first feature.
What is the pipeline from Male Gigolo to Kung Fu Panda to DreamWorks? Just to DreamWorks. Yeah. That's shocking.
Yeah.
But good for Mike Mitchell.
Proud of you.
And that is the Kung Fu Panda 4. That is that is Kung Fu Panda 4. If you have kids that like the other films, go watch it. It's a fun time. If you don't have kids and you like the Kung Fu Panda films, you'll have a good time. I don't think there's anything really offensive in this film. If anything, the most quote-unquote offensive thing about this film is that there's just not a lot to chew on.
Yeah.
It just exists. And you know what? The fact that it exists and it's not a giant piece of shit, sure, I'll take it. There are worse Monkey Paul wishes that have been out there than give me more Kung Fu Panda, and it goes, okay, but you'll get 3 TV shows no one watches and a fourth film that is okay.
Yeah.
It could be worse, but not the next film we have. I'm actually going to have some high expectations other than this film.
Yeah.
So this film with Kung Fu Panda, we were kind of on the middling side of things. But our next episode, our first episode of April, is another prequel.
Yeah, we're prequeling In the Flowers. Yeah,
because it just so happens in the same month, not only do we get the next film in the Kung Fu Panda franchise, we're also getting the next film in the legendary Godzilla franchise, as well as Legendary's Kong.
Yes.
Because a few years back,
the Legendary Monsterverse?
Yes, it's called? The Monsterverse, which...
The Monarchverse? I don't know.
Monsterverse.
Okay.
I think it's Monster.
Oh, is it officially Monsterverse?
I don't know. I like Monsterverse better.
Okay, me too.
But around the time, maybe... I don't know if it's the same year we did Kung Fu Panda Trilogy, but around the same time we did Kung Fu Panda, we also did Legendary's take on Godzilla.
Yeah.
With 2014's Godzilla, 2017, 2018's Godzilla King of the Monsters, mm-hmm. and then 2021's Godzilla versus Kong.
Yeah.
And we kind of talked about how, you know, we knew that there was going to be another one coming up. We didn't necessarily know if it was going to be another Godzilla and Kong film.
Right.
Turns out, next film in the franchise is going to be not only Godzilla and Kong together, but it's Godzilla and Kong together as a fucking team.
Yeah.
So on April 6th, we're going to be doing our prequel on Godzilla X Kong : The New Empire. And holy
strap
shit.
In.
It looks bonkers.
Yeah.
And
Kong gets a mech arm.
Kong gets
a mech glove.
He gets a mech glove.
Godzilla gets pink lights and lasers.
And they're finding basically a giant orangutan with a whip sword.
Yeah, like a bone whip thing. Spine whip or something.
I cannot fucking wait. Godzilla fans are eating good right now. And if you are trying to pit -1 against New Empire,
no.
I'll have you know, both those men shook hands and held their favorite Godzilla toys together, so their friends quit it.
No, it's good to have both. It's good
it
to
is,
have...
Oh.
It's cool. It's really cool that we're in an era where a Godzilla movie is winning an Oscar, and then, like, a month later, we're getting a dumb team-up, crazy, wild monster movie.
Like, could you just imagine going back to the 60s, like, when the first Godzilla versus King Kong comes out, and it's like, it's a film that is corny as shit, has an embarrassingly an embarrassing amount of blackface. Should not fucking do
Wait,
that.
Which
it's
one?
Godzilla versus King Kong,
okay.
The original,
the first, yeah,
in the 60s. King like,
Kong.
It's
yeah.
very uncomfortable, and also has a plot point where they have to pick up Kong with balloons.
Yeah.
And go back to someone who is seeing that film, comes out and goes, hey, guess what? What if I told you that you're going to get that, but from an American company, as well as a serious Godzilla film from Japan, less than a year apart from each other. Like, any Godzilla fan, I think, at that point would be like, you're a fucking liar. There's no way Godzilla lasts past the 60s or something like that. And you get, it's just such a good time. And also, there's the fucking Apple TV Plus show that is pretty good.
The Monarch show.
It's pretty good, yeah. It's just like, what's better than one Russell? Two Russells. It should be Godzilla versus two Russells, but they couldn't have the budget to put Godzilla in every episode. So they have enough for two Russells an episode.
What are the odds we get? Can we get Kurt Russell in New Empire, or is he dead by now in the universe?
You haven't watched the show, have you?
I haven't watched the show.
Okay, this is spoilers for Monarch Legacy of Monsters, the big Apple TV Plus show. Kurt Russell's probably dead.
Oh, okay.
I think there's not a huge gap timeline-wise between where that first season ends and where Godzilla New Empire is.
Okay.
Maybe at most a decade.
Okay. Well, we could get Mecha
maybe?
Kurt Russell.
Mecha, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, it's
Cyborg.
If you follow
Russell.
Walking Dead rules, you don't see his dead body.
Okay. So.
You don't.
So he will be doing the Avengers Initiative end credits scene Godzilla X Kong.
It's not like it's
here to talk to you about the Kaiju Initiative.
You don't see his dead body, but also in
about the Destroy All Monsters Initiative.
Well, in King of the Monsters, you also see Sally Hawkins just like fall under an ice.
Yes.
And get like stepped, and it's like, oh, I guess she's dead now.
Yeah.
So really, it could go either way, but ultimately. There are probably some, there might be some characters that could show up in the New Empire. I don't know if they will. Because I think Monarch might be getting a season 2.
Oh, okay.
So they might be kind of keeping that.
Good for them.
Distant enough. Honestly, yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I will tell you, the week to week, the weekly episodes kind of kills it.
It doesn't live up to the weekly hype.
No, it really
doesn't. The weekly
anticipation. It's still fun, but like most shows, it does have a bit of a dip in the middle where it's like, okay, I got to wait another week for this.
Would have preferred the binge?
I would have preferred, I don't know.
Or
a
shorter series.
I think if there's a good in between, I'm a bit of a sucker for like maybe two a week.
Oh.
Or like three. Like you could do something like that.
I like when a show starts with two episodes.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish shows would, like, keep that up after the first two episodes.
Yes. I know that, like, that's kind of what Disney Plus has been doing recently with, like, most of their stuff. I know, like, their new X-Men 97, I think, starts with two or three episodes.
Yeah.
So. But, yeah, we're excited to talk about Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. And we might even have, we won't spoil it now, might even have a guest.
Yeah.
Who knows? Just stay tuned. You'll figure it out. But until then, tune in on April 6th when we talk about Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. And as always, I'm Logan Sowash.
And I'm Andy Carr.
Thank you so much for listening. Bye.